Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season 3, episode 6, titled New Eden. Aaron, what'd you think about this episode?
Another pretty good episode of For All Mankind. It's frustrating to see our alternate universe 25 year ago compatriots struggle with a lot of issues that, I don't know, I guess I would say I thought we're kind of moved on. Maybe we're bringing that back off the shelf to relitigate in the culture. But I thought the Mars stuff is great. I love seeing life on Mars. I really enjoy the intrigue and tension between the three different factions. I like seeing Danielle settle into a role as commander. She's a very... Danielle seems like she's a real big, all right, people type of person. You know, she's got that shop teacher energy. Like, all right, people, it's 3 o'clock, end of period. Get the broom, start sweeping up. You know, like, it's, come on, people. Let's go, people. All right, people. That's her command style.
Except there's another shop teacher in the class. Yeah, it's pretty annoying.
Except there's another douchier shop teacher that's cabbaging onto all of her supplies and half of her students and resources, and she just has to sit there and take it. Although maybe not. I thought that there's some really good, like, dejected Ed planting the Helios flag second on how, like, just, you know, that meme where they have Jurassic Park music to play over something majestic, and then they show, like, the reality of something that's not as good, and they play, like, the shitty recorder version, seven. Like, it felt like that, like the Star Spangled Banner of the U.S. flag, and then the Soviet flag underneath it, and then Ed and, you know, are just playing their second place Helios, not even a real country flag. I thought that was funny. What'd you think of this episode?
Yeah, I liked it. I don't know. I assume, like, the stuff about Will and Ellen and Larry, all that stuff is the relitigation that you're talking about, which I quite liked. I mean, I thought, like, yeah, it's an issue we haven't actually dealt with on the show. You know, it's been brought up. It's been hidden in the closet, so to speak, and we haven't actually addressed it head on. I found it, you know, it is roughly tracking-ish with where we came to in the real world with that stuff. So I don't know what they're going to do that's, like, extra here. It seems like there's going to be a whole plot revolving around, like, revealing that Larry is gay and, like, Ellen having to deal with that. And, like, is that going to blow up her spot?
It has to.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm interested to see where that goes. I find that very emotionally affecting for everyone involved.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so I'm in for that too when the show wants to go there, but yeah, as far as, like, the science and planetary landing stuff, I thought it was great. Margo, how do you feel about Margo in this episode? Because she is, like, I don't know. I'm very quickly turning on Margo. She's becoming one of the characters I'm most angry at.
Yeah,
like she's willing to do all the things that, like, Ellen's not willing to do with the funding of NASA, right? She's, like, bribing people with just peeling off a little bit of funding so that she can get her personal shit in order. And it's like, I don't know, between that and what she did to Molly, I'm starting to turn on her. And, you know, being a Russian spy, all that also.
Yeah, no. I feel like I turned on her early in the season, and then last episode kind of turned me back just because, you know, she's landing on Mars and the, you know, anytime the Russians outdouche an American, it's easy to kind of, like, be sympathetic towards your fellow country man or woman. But yeah, all this stuff that she's cloaking in a national interest that are really just her personal interests, and the fact that she is wheeling and dealing with the NASA budget as she, you know, it is an oligarchy, and it doesn't seem like it's going to survive this season. There's going to be so much immense pressures. Ellen is going to, like, I can't even imagine. You say, like, it's, so one of my theories are a lot of the social trends in this show, the ones that are accelerated is because it's something we're in direct competition with the USSR. The reason we are comparatively further ahead in sexual gender politics in this fictional 1995 is because the Russians were particularly egalitarian in that You know, recognizing women scientists, engineers, astronauts way before, you know, we did. Russia is not especially pro-LGBT even today, let alone back in the 80s and 90s. So they did not push us on that. Therefore, America is, you know, making hardly any progress in that regard.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense that it is going about the same way. The only difference is, like, if you imagine if Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were, like, secretly the gay. And that came out in the mid-90s. I wonder, like, will Roger Moore ever play with a scenario where America becomes more backwards because of a historical butterfly flap? Like, will this actually set, you know, America hears, oh my God, they've infiltrated us at the highest ranks, and it's like there's still some AIDS hysteria in 95?
Yeah, apparently. That's a good question. I don't know. We'll see what kind of toys he's playing with here.
Because so far it's only been like he shows where we have advanced, like in terms of female empowerment, in terms of even, I think, racial dynamics. Is that something that the USSR always all hit the United States on? But these other ones, I wonder if like there'll be a reactionary where, you know, when we catch up to the 2015s, 2020s, the America in that future is decidedly less pro-LGBT. Not that America, by any stretch of imagination, universally is pro-LGBT, but like we've come a long way.
Oh yeah,
since I've been a kid anyway. So yeah, I wonder if he will have that kind of, you know, more through the dark side of the mirror than just reflecting it back at us.
Yeah, I mean, that would make a lot of sense, right? Those butterfly flaps don't go in one direction. They kind of flap all over the place.
The only reason I guess he wouldn't is because, like, I imagine it'd be pretty brutal as in, like, a gay or lesbian or trans fan of For All Mankind to watch the world become even more punitive and to have that to look forward to. But yeah, that's
and also if you're trying to create an aspirational show, you wouldn't want to do that, right? Like, Star Trek wouldn't want to have an episode where Picard was just like, yeah, being gay actually is bad. that would be kind of against the ethos of the show. So
yeah,
it depends on what kind of show.
As that is a knee jerk reaction,
right?
Although Picard did have plenty of knee jerk reactions to things. Like, I think that he didn't want to grant personhood to the Borg, which, you know, I can understand with his experiences. But also, he was a little fuddy duddy about the nature of Data's personhood. I thought maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that's usually in an analog. It's not like there's ever an episode where Picard's like, you know, in the 24th century, this gay thing still makes me uncomfortable. I just don't know, right? I just don't know, number one.
Yeah.
It's tough I'm not sure how it'll come out in the wash. And if it is some kind of knee jerk reactionary thing, I'm sure Moore will eventually bring it around to how that eventually. I mean, I guess would be one of the things I would think is in the show's DNA, that progress is inevitable. You can delay it, you can subvert it,
could be,
you can redirect it, but, like, you know, what's that quote, the moral arc of the universe bends in a pretty consistently good direction,
I suppose. Yeah, and there's going to be regression on some topics every once in a while.
Sure.
Like, it happens. So yeah, it's not a straight line.
How's the Danny stuff? Not Danielle Poole. How's the Danny stuff hitting you?
I kind of just wish they'd get to it already. I mean, Danny losing his shit up there, and I'm really, really annoyed that the hacker guy has not said anything, because he clearly knows. He clearly knows that Danny was up to no good, and he said nothing. Danny's over there watching all his messages, all of Ed's messages, and I'm just like, God, somebody do something about this, because this is a problem that is brewing. Ed knows it. Hacker guy has to know it.
That's the thing, is Ed is cottoning on that there's a problem, but he is seeing it all through the lens of Gordo, which only at best half the piece of the puzzle here.
Yeah, like, he's not man enough to do this mission or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, the right real stuff. Issue is that he's also dealing with being up there with the guy whose wife he slept with. So. And still wants to sleep with. It's weird and gross.
It's a literal Ed. He puts the Ed in the Oedipus complex. Like, he, yeah, there's a big guy. He's my daddy, but I hate him, and I love my. Yeah, there's a lot of. And the thing is,
what's,
is like
what's it becomes, the reverse Oedipus complex, where like you have somebody who you feel is your son, but also isn't.
Danipus. I don't know if Shakespeare wrote anything like that.
I don't think so.
The other thing is like the further we get away from like the Cairn, like the more it becomes abstracted to just kind of like a space madness or tension or because like I said, I even without the Cairn stuff, I think they could have made this into a solid like you're treating me like my dad. That's already an unreasonable expectation. I'm my own person. Like I think there's all the stuff they didn't need to drag poor Cairn into this. But
yeah,
I don't know. They have. What are you going to do?
And now you got pills involved. That's and stealing from the medicine locker. So I don't know, man.
Yeah,
it's going bad fast, but I'm kind of like getting a little impatient with it also.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely going to cause a disaster of some kind. Mm-hmm. It's the only question is, you know, what and is it going to affect materials? Is it going to affect nation states? Is it just going to affect right. like people's lives? Like that we don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, why don't we get into the recap?
Let's do it.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we start off kind of where we left things last week with Sojourner. We find out it's pretty damaged from the landing. It wasn't that smooth of a landing. It's no longer skyworthy, let's say. And the astronauts are moving what they can over to the HAB site. They're gonna come back for more later. But then Ed lands, and he's second again, and they each plant their respective flags on Mars.
Can I ask you if you've noticed their ridiculous spacesuits yet? Or did you spend another episode not noticing
the Michelin Man get-ups?
How did you not notice last episode?
They didn't have the hero shot of Ed walking into the HAB.
You needed a Goodyear symbol on him to know that he looks like a blue blimp.
I went back and I watched The Fifth Element. And so it was fresh in my mind when I saw the aliens in The Fifth Element. This suit is nothing but one of those. Right? The sarcophagus dude.
The hero shot of him coming in that HAB and he's as wide as he is tall is comedy. Is such comedy.
I'm surprised he fit through the airlock, frankly.
It was designed for NASA folk, not Helios. Yeah.
I feel like they're wearing the suits backwards. Like the armholes don't work the way they should. I know physically it works out, but like it feels wrong to me when I look at it.
It looks like they're trying to do more of a like a rigid body, almost diving bell type of approach, which would solve a lot of issues. We talked about the pressurized gloves being a problem with fine digit manipulation, and if you have these kind of hard articulated joints, you might not have that problem. But oh man, it just does not look cool.
It'd
be a liability if Mars becomes a battlefield. It's a liability.
Yeah,
you're three dudes wide. You're gonna soak bullets, man.
That's crazy. Any hit on Mars is a good hit.
We talked last week about Sojourner and like looked like it was a hard landing, and man, there was like boulders and ridges and everything. It's worse than that. If Sojourner landed like 20 feet backwards, it would have fully ruptured the hull, and I think everyone dies. Yeah. Like, they're lucky that they only took out the engines.
Yeah, this is like a shipwreck dashed on the rocks. It's crazy. Their engines are almost peeled off on the back.
Yeah, they're at a 45-degree angle. I don't think that is any longer space-worthy. So now we've got what I thought was going to happen three episodes ago, but it's going to happen, I guess, on the way back, which is one big lifeboat returning to Earth.
I find this idea super interesting because you've got a commander of the lifeboat who is altruistic and willing to help out his fellow astronauts at all costs. He's willing to take them home. But he's got a tenuous grasp on his own ship. If there is some update that happens surreptitiously from Helios ground control, he might not have that option. And Dev is not the guy who's going to sit around and rescue people while there's money and prestige on the line. So there's a lot of leverage here that Helios now has. And I wonder if Dev is going to press that at all.
Yeah, I would think that you could charge. Certainly, you could present NASA a bill for like rescuing their people. And that bill could be astronomically high, and they kind of have to force to pay it.
And they know NASA has all this extra money, right?
Yeah, they can afford it. I really like the vague like country western theme they're going for, the cowboy music throughout the episode, even the atmospheric kind of like composed for the show music. It's very bluegrass and twangy and, you know, being out on the range kind of feeling. Because it does feel like much more of a Wild West than I wonder why that is. Why does it feel like more like a Wild West town than Jamestown ever did? Is it because it's truly like the Russians and Americans and the living on top of each other?
It could be. I honestly think like the coloration of the planet has something to do with that. It
does
feels
look
much
very...
more like a desert or a rugged. I don't know. Yeah,
it looks New Mexican. It looks New Mexican.
It does. It does.
Like that could easily be filmed into Hodgely. Hell, it might have been.
Yeah.
You know, like the red dust and the mesas and it's very Western for sure.
I found it interesting that, like you said, the landing with Ed is very like lackluster, right? He's sad Ed putting up a sad flag in his sad landing
site.
It
really is.
And
in his sad fucking spacesuit.
Right. So, that is the contrast here, right? Like, NASA got there first. NASA got there better equipped first. But that's going to change, I think, as Helios brings down their mobile HABs. They're going to have the better support. They have potentially more supplies because they have a much larger ship. They have more people. They have a lot more, potentially a lot more resources at their command. I wonder if that's going to be a tension later. Like, yeah, we're helping out NASA now, but, you know, as they become more established, they might not feel like they need to.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, sometimes being first in the market, it might be good for the history books, but mm-hmm. it's rarely good long-term economics.
Sure.
You know, and NASA getting there first, but they have no water. They're struggling to scrub their CO2. They've got meager supplies. It does feel like the, you know, that this is, like Karen was saying, this is still very much a race. Mm-hmm. You know, the exciting history book part is over, but who is actually going to get a first successful colony? Who's going to get something that economically makes sense? Yeah.
Yeah, and we get the news covering the landings, and they're talking about that too, how it's now a race to find water. And we see that Danielle's crew is rationing water. They're down to a half gallon per day. They haven't found any yet. And they're having all kinds of trouble.
And if you don't know, as a backpacker, a half gallon a day is something else, especially since that's like, that's not just your personal use, your hydration, even like, you know, wash. It's like literally everything. And hydrating food takes up so much goddamn water.
Hmm.
Like, this is not good. In fact, I don't think you could sustain it for very long without your astronauts starting to waste away. I wonder if they're going to get like Mark Watney on this, where like the NASA people will be like losing weight and black circles on their eyes. And
I thought you were saying like, oh, they're going to break down their fuel for CO2 and hydrogen and oxygen and make their own water.
I thought there's a little bit of a false dilemma here in the news reporting because they're talking about Helos is just now starting to make the return fuel. That was, you know, the NASA was all about the pre-supply, the Robert Zubrin case for Mars, where you send automated laboratories that go ahead and start making your oxygen. And I don't know why NASA doesn't have a ready supply of water there. I guess it was only designed for four people or six, and that's an eight. But the one that I really had a question is, if NASA has enough methane for their return trip, why the hell can't Helos have it? Like, there's this thing is like, oh, Helos has to start making the fuel. Well, NASA has a lake of fuel, and it's methane. They're both methane engines. I'm not really sure what the problem would be there. That felt like a bit of a false dilemma.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. They do have. Are there fuel systems compatible? Is that? Because I mean, know they were
like,
with the
so
Russians.
So methane's methane, but you might be if they have, like, the hoses aren't compatible, but my God, with 2 years, you'd think you could fabricate. I've seen Apollo 13. They'd be able to do something. Yeah.
A couple of air scrubber filters, yeah.
Save all your bendy straws from your high seas and your tangs. We're going to be using those.
You know what I'm surprised about is that the news wasn't replaying this footage over and over of Danielle and the Russian cosmonaut getting onto the surface frame by frame and analyzing who actually touched Martian soil first. Like, that's what would happen nowadays. They would be this pissing contest, like frame by frame.
You're right.
You know, fucking who's the other Z? The Zapruder style, right? Like, oh, but Danielle's arm goes back into the left here, and she actually touches ground behind the Soviet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an instant replay in football, except for the stakes are the history books. So, rewind that. How many angles we got? I got a kick out of the Democrat, Bill O'Reilly. Like crowing and taking credit, like, oh, we did this and we're, you know, he was anti-NASA until they got a win, and now he's going to be super pro NASA. And if they had cratered in, you'd know he'd also be decrying the expense and how stupid it was and all. It's like, yeah, it's interesting to see that part of the through the looking glass, and I'm curious to see how Moore develops that. It seems like his thesis is anyone would be, everyone's desperate to hold on to the levers of power, and it doesn't matter which party is would be in power. It's just, I'm curious to see how that develops and what people's appetite is for that kind of storyline.
Sure. The tensions are definitely a little high there in the NASA camp. And then we go over to the Helios base where Ed sends a message to Karen about why he didn't land, which Danny intercepts and thinking about later causes him to make a mistake with the drill, which puts a hole in his suit and his hand. And he has to, he's supposed to go up to orbit due to protocol here. And Ed starts questioning about the accident and gets just a bunch of attitude from him.
I will say, I wondered when he put his hand there. I don't think he disabled the drill motor. And I thought for a split second that was going to take a core sample of his hand. Is this Chekhov's core sample? Because the fact that I'm almost certain that he did not disable and do things safely, he did it. Yeah. And the fact that he's going to be high as a kite for a few. Do you think this is going to happen again? Only it's going to be a lot worse?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of mistakes you can make in space, and
true.
Danny is not in his right mind at the moment.
Do you think it's insane to give an astronaut Tylenol codeine for a hand cut?
No, because I think astronauts usually have quite a bit of discipline, and I don't think that they are going to go overboard with the codeine.
But it's like you got a headache. Here's some morphine, you know, sure. Like, yeah, given an opiate for essentially, you know, I don't because I don't know. They didn't really show the hand. Maybe it's cut really bad. But even like, yeah, it just seems insane to. But I guess I remember when the opiates for like the, you know, the oxycodones and stuff like that first came out, like they were hailed as like, well, no one will ever have to feel pain again. We have so much great pain management techniques and it's like, oh, shit, it's actually an opiate and it's highly addictive, too.
Yeah.
Maybe it reflects the idea that like, oh, yeah, well, why should you feel any pain? Here you go. Here's some codeine.
Sure.
But
and if he's off duty, I guess it's not as bad as if they need him at the console, but they might need him at the console at any moment,
thing.
You know?
Yeah, like that would take you off active duty and back to the Phoenix more so than the wound itself. But as we'll see as a pattern, Ed's going to make a special exemption for a special boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to do the exact opposite of what he wants it to do.
Yeah, this message that he intercepts is pretty brutal. Whether you're Danny or Karen. I don't, because for Karen, she's like hearing that he made, you know, this exception for a kid that he views as his son when in fact he's, you know, betrayed him pretty significantly. And then for Danny, it's like, boy, I've betrayed this man and he views me as a son, right? It's like bad all around.
Shame is the worst, man. It really makes you do a bunch of shitty things.
We need the hacker guy to step up. Come on, man, you know something's up. Tell Ed. Whenever.
I wanted to point out, did you notice that the Martian HAB modules are clones of the Jamestown HAB modules?
Huh.
And I thought like, well, that's kind of chintzy, but they established it because they're moving up everything 2 years that they were essentially stealing an expansion from Jonestown to do this.
Nice.
So it saves a shit ton of budget because these are just slightly redressed Jamestown sites and it makes sense within the historical fiction of this universe. So,
yeah.
Nice job, guys. Nice job.
If you got HABs at work, why wouldn't you use them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm all for it. All right, Margo tries to talk Nelson, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, forget his last name, we'll get it later, into bringing Sergei to the U.S. And in exchange, she offers him some NASA funds for military use.
The F-22 project she's gonna fund.
Yeah. This is where I start to turn on Margo.
Ooh, doing a black ops on Russian soil. Like, this is some real Tom Clancy shit, and it's high risk.
Oh, yeah.
If that gets out, like, you have a instant diplomatic crisis on your hand, worldwide security crisis, and oof, yeah.
I mean, yeah it's, I don't know, it's tough, because, like, the Russians attacked Americans in their moon base, so, like, there's, you know, a little turnabout is fair play here stuff.
But as a response of taking one of their guys prisoner, essentially.
Yeah.
We shot first, but burnt one of their dudes alive, critically wounded the other.
There was an escalation here that was maybe not warranted, but all right.
Right. Yeah. It's tough to say. But yeah, Margo Taken continued to doing the old face heel turn.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if she was actually working on a goal that I felt was worthy, but like, and I feel bad for Sergei, right? I don't want him to be tortured in a KGB prison, but at the same time, this is all personal and it's getting in the way of her doing her actual job.
Yes. They made their bed. They knew the whole time what they're doing was wrong and morally compromised. Mm-hmm. And if it's the fate of the world versus Margo and Sergei, I'm taking the fate of the world. Sorry.
You think Ellen and Margo are going to butt heads a little bit over this funding stuff? Because Ellen was very anti giving away NASA funding last episode.
Well, but like if, I guess against NASA's will. Yeah, I don't. There's so much obvious friction that could happen. Like if Margo gets outed as a spy, if Ellen gets outed as a lesbian, like it seems like both of these seemingly very powerful people, their feet are made of clay and they have some weaknesses there.
And I think it's pretty telling, you know, what Margo was saying about Ellen last episode, right? Like she's not one of us anymore. She's like mad with power or, you know, whatever.
She has. She's completely forgotten all the shoulders of giants that she stood upon, all the breaks that she got. And she's thinking everything is uniquely her vision. And she's become this. Yeah, she's become a queen of this fiefdom. And it's I mean, it's not democratic, to say the least.
Oh,
but,
no.
Yeah.
All right, then we watch Leda looking at the Russians in mission control with trepidation. Just a quick shot there.
And well, then, do you think they're because like Aleda was always coded in the early seasons as troubled, particularly kind of like paranoid delusion type of thing. Mm-hmm. They're not playing this at all because like, yeah, these Russians are doing shady shit. They're whispering, they're writing in Cyrillic, they're passing notes behind the teachers. But like, it's like, are you paranoid if they're really out to get you? But I wonder if there's going to be. If that's going to interface with this to make it a lot worse, because it seems like she's very impulsive. Like she didn't wait for permission to tell Danielle about this. She just went off and did it.
Yeah.
And Margo didn't try to stop her. I don't know. Maybe that's her ultimate authority. But I wonder if Aleda's paranoia is going to mix with this actual paranoid situation somewhat volatilely.
Yeah, we'll see. Then Karen visits Dev in the middle of a very heated meeting. Or I guess I don't know. He's arguing with his investors or his board or somebody. She tells him that the Russian space program wants a meeting with Helios and that she's willing to come back as long as she can be the COO and have an office. She's looking for a more traditional corporate structure here.
Well, yeah. I mean, as we found out last episode, Helios is very traditional. Like she said, the lack of titles just serves to keep you in, you know, perpetual charge of everything. I wonder, but COO is certainly subordinate to the CEO, so Dev will still be the boss of Karen. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe they were trying to set her up to be analogous to like Margo, maybe, but I don't think so. So I'm not exactly sure what it might be just like. It's a win that she's changing the culture to just reflect reality. And like, you know, Helios won't be that special, quote unquote, after, you know, she colonizes them. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Not sure where they're going with that.
I was a little surprised to see Karen going back to Helios at all, given what she said about, you know, enjoying building something from the ground up. I feel like Dev has already built this thing. Now, I know there's a lot of building to do on Mars. And I think that's what she ultimately wants to be part of.
Is what she's,
Yeah. And I guess, yeah, that's the path to it. Because you're not going to just go over to NASA and make them an offer to work with them.
Right.
So that could work out. Then we get some interviews with the NASA crew. And during these interviews, Will decides to reveal that he's gay to the world. Everyone. And you can kind of see it like in these shots where he's out looking at the horizon on Mars. He's having some kind of existential transformation, right? And he's just like, he's looking at this new world and just thinking, is he thinking like, this is our blank slate? This is our opportunity here to make this place better.
There's definitely like the last time there was a new world discovered and people came over, they were fleeing religious persecution because it turns out they're religious nut jobs, and everybody in England and Europe is like, you need to put a, we're trying to go through an enlightenment here, people, you need to put a pause on all this shit. And this is kind of like the reverse, you know, like this kind of new Eden, a new tree of knowledge. We're going to relitigate what we think society is all about. It seems natural to have those kind of thoughts mm-hmm. when you see this pristine world untouched by humans. Like, how could we do things better? It's such an interesting way for this show to talk about like intersectionality. Like there's like, you know, that conversation with Danielle and Will is like a textbook example of that, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But mm-hmm. I thought that's what I was thinking. Cause like when I was watching with Jack and Cecily, and they're like, oh my God, is he getting space madness? I'm like, I didn't know what it was. I'm like, no, I think there's something else brewing here. It feels more like hope than, then by the end of the episode, that might have changed a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still up in the air. But we'll see how that comes back down. There is fallout, though, on Earth. Ellen is trying to deal with it. And both her vice president and the chairman of Joint Chiefs say that it's a political disaster. And personally, obviously, this is a very difficult position for Ellen.
Yeah. Politically, it seems that the Democrats she needs to hold together to pass this jobs bill are going to be split by this gay bombshell being thrown by Will, and the VP that we spotted as very conservative is mm-hmm. all up in arms about this.
He views it as a moral issue.
Yeah, and an electoral one, that there's no way that Republicans, if they are allowed to be painted with this brush, that they can have electoral success in the future. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Here's one thing that they're talking, you know, about this, and that guy, the VP, says like, we can't have this, you know, children look up to astronauts. And I'm just like, yeah. And that's exactly why it needs to happen, because your backwards ass ideas are not being challenged by the people that children look up to. And therefore, the mind change that needs to happen is not happening.
Well, I think that's the thing, is like when I look at this culture wars, it's not that conservatives don't think that like representation works. They know it does, mm-hmm. which is why they are dead set against it. Because like if, you know, any type of other, if you hang around with them enough, you realize, oh, we actually have much more in common than we have the few things that might divide us or might be different about us. And
their differences become less scary, too, right? Because they're less foreign.
It gets normalized, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of concern on both sides of the political aisle about things being normalized, good, you know, good and bad.
Sure.
You know, I think, I mean, yeah, obviously, I don't want some things to be normalized. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, every time there's an election, you don't like fucking trying to overthrow the government. right. But some things, like, you know, getting more queer youth out in the, you know, out in the media eye, participating in politics, all that stuff, that kind of representation, I'm all for. So mm-hmm. that's why they call it a culture war. You got both sides fighting over the same kind of intellectual, philosophical battlefield.
Sure. It's Bradford. That's the Joint Chief of Staff's chairman's name.
And you'll recall that he was the mm-hmm. NASA liaison. And as the NASA star continues to rise, he's rose along, because if he's on the chairman, he is like, other than the president of the United States, you know, he and his fellow generals and admirals are the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. He's extremely, extremely important.
Yeah, there's only one person in Washington without a boss, and he's only got one boss, that person.
Yep.
Over at Happy Valley Base, which is where NASA is, Will tells Danielle why he came out while on the mission. And despite understanding, she's still pissed off that he didn't consider how it would impact their mission. This is a pretty good conversation. I like this. I think, like, obviously Will has the right of it here, and Danielle mm-hmm. is being a little bit less understanding than I would like her to be. But also she's not experiencing the same things in this moment that Will is. So I
talk about this word intersectionality, which is this theory about how privileges and what's the opposite of privileges? I forget.
Disadvantages? I don't know.
Disadvantages? Well, that implies that they're bad. But things outside the minority's purview. Out-group signifiers, whatever. The way, it's not like, okay, you're just a calculus of, well, if you're black, you're this, and you're gay, you're this, and if you're black and gay. But it's definitely like Danielle thinks that she can understand Will through the lens of, in fact, she thinks that she might even be like being gay is better because it's like a cloaking device. You can turn it on and off at will, you know?
Yeah.
There's
so much in Will's response to that, right?
Right.
And he doesn't say it, but like, if you think about it for a second, she's asking him, she's saying like, you can hide who you are. You can hide.
Which is a psychological hell of its own
right?
making too. Right.
And I don't know if she understands that. I don't know.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, it is a disadvantage in America to be a black man. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a disadvantage to be a gay man. Mm-hmm. But it's a completely different type of experience you get as being a black gay man.
Sure.
And then it's also entirely different to be like what it's like to be a black gay woman, or to be a disabled gay white person. You know, like those mm-hmm. types of things intersect in strange ways. And that's where I think a lot of people who are new to kind of that intersectionality are going to be like Danielle and think that like, oh, I can always generalize to. And you see this is white people, too, like when you try to bring up privilege and they all talk about their disadvantages. Well, I grew up this way. I grew up. Well, that's not the point.
Sure.
The point is, you know, what are your probabilities in a society of being able to move without and make decisions and actions without anything, you know, constraining your freedom to do so. You know, the less of those disadvantages or out-group signifiers you have, the more free you're going to be able to do whatever the hell you want. The more those things intersect in your life, the more you're going to be put under a microscope. You're going to be held back. You're going to be told that you can't do this, you can't do that. And yeah, it's why it's so deeply frustrating, because they can agree about things about what it's like to be black in America, but yeah. He doesn't know what the struggle of to be a woman and to go through a very male oriented thing like NASA mm-hmm. and buck all those trends, and she has no idea what it's like to be gay.
Yeah.
And that's the frustration. You can see that they have all this common stuff, but they don't know how to talk about it. They don't know how to use it. And the idea that, like, you know, she's like, she also says, well, this is NASA. If you have a problem, you run up the chain of command. Being gay?
Hey, is that a problem?
they would run that up the chain of command, and he would have gotten summarily, you know, like he wouldn't have made
discharged.
It to NASA.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought this stuff, and the conversation with Larry and Ellen later on about how reverse engineer, don't ask, don't tell
uh-huh.
in this universe. I thought these things are really interesting and important for people to understand about how politics and culture in America works.
Sure. Yeah, it's a pretty nuanced look at it, too.
Yeah, I agree.
So the Russian Lenara, the head of their program, visits Helios with information on a large water reserve on Mars, and they want to pay Helios to fly them there and extract it. Karen says they want 50% of the water extracted as their fee, and it seems like they'll go for it. Didn't actually agree.
That's why it's good to be in the rooms, because, like, you know, if you're an Uber driver and you're driving someone across town to make a $1 billion deal, you don't get to, like, well, now that I know that, but, like, this is a unique situation where Helios can really put it to the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they'd get it for 50-50? I feel like I wish I saw the actual negotiated deal. But the Russians, that's the thing. They act like they are beholden to no one. But in reality, on this arena, Mars, they're literally beholden to everyone because they can't do shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were not prepared for this mission. They don't even have a drive that can really get them to Mars. They had to steal that. They're playing second fiddle to everyone here.
It's funny because I kept on thinking back to other times, I read these fictional accounts of like, you know, the Age of Sail back in Napoleon times and, you know, what would happen when you've got a ship that gets captured by a hostile nation, you know, and like, how do you treat the prisoners of war? How do you treat the officers and their men? And it seems like there was kind of this unspoken thing of like, well, if we got you captured while we're at sea, you know, we'll kind of like respect each other and we'll work together because the alternative is we confine you all to quarters. And like, I feel like the Russian is like doing this whole kind of like, well, you can't boss my men around, and which is all well enough and good. But the flip side of that is you're supposed to show some deference to the mm-hmm. actual commanding officer that didn't kick your ass and take your fucking boat. Because, again, like, I think Danielle's perfectly in her right to just confine these guys to their quarters for the rest of their mission. Just keep them locked in an unused airlock and feed them through a slot. And sure. There you go. So it's like, that's the thing that's bothering me is like, I feel like the Russian is taking all of the advantages of the situation that he's in and being in complete denial of the disadvantages. And here in Helos boardroom, that is rectified somewhat.
Yeah, and I want to ask you here in a few scenes why you think that is, because I have an idea, but I'm not certain. They're
okay.
Playing a little coy with that. So Danielle hears something about the joint mission of the Russians and Helios, and she goes to the Russian commander, but he won't give her any details.
He's very dismissive and rude, this guy.
Very. Very, and that's going to be more interesting later. Then we go over to Kelly, who calls Ed and tells him about all the technical problems they're having, and Ed's worried. He tells her he's going to be seeing her pretty soon because of this joint Russian mission, but he can't tell her about the details of it. I was wondering at this point, when Kelly's talking about all these problems, you know, the CO2 scrubbers and we can't find water, And seeing the attitude of the Russian cosmonauts, if they might be sabotaging the NASA Habs in some way.
Interesting. I didn't get that, but it would be...
It'd be risky on their part because they're living in those Habs currently.
Right.
But if they know that this Helios deal is potentially on the table, maybe...
Yeah, that they've got their hand securely on another branch. They can afford to start sawing this other branch to fuck over the Americans. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Could be.
In a real politic kind of way.
Yep. And I also hate to see this tribalism coming between family members here. You know, a family is certainly a tribe too, but the fact that Ed wants to tell Kelly all this stuff, but he can't tell her because he's beholden to some corporate overlord, really sucks.
I actually thought all this shit was overplayed. This is a military family that, I mean, did Ed get pissed that Kelly kept the yo-ho-ho pirate sail thing to herself because that was a national security? Like, what is the deal? Both of you people were in the Navy. You know what operational security is all about, need to know and all that kind of stuff. I thought Kelly, like, putting a screw... Yeah, like, I thought that was all... Like the reaction to being told, well, look, I can't talk about it, I thought it was all overblown. You know,
I agree. I think it's slightly different because it's a private corporation as opposed to a sovereign nation state. But like, I don't know. When you take it out of the context of military, it's different.
It seems she's a little bit more aspirational, that like she's like, well, we're in this together. We're in a survival situation. We're frontiering. We're homesteading. We, you know, maybe thinks that the complete lack of borders between them and this Hab is more important than the very real borders back on Earth. Mm-hmm. But she would be wrong. I mean, she can think that and she could be idealistic, but she'd be wrong about how that translates into their situation.
Sure. I think her and Will need to get together and have a conversation, because they could probably see eye to eye on some stuff.
I also wonder if Ron Moore regrets introducing Kelly last season because he secretly wants her to be like 23 years old. he wants her to be like 22 years old and have like these spacey ideas and be moonstruck over this handsome Russian boy. In reality, she's almost 30 and she's been a professional scientist and researcher and astronaut for a decade. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's the carbon dioxide.
Sure. Getting loopy up there, a little lightheaded. All right, Will is working on the hab, and Roland is assisting him, but Roland doesn't want to get too close to him now that he knows he's gay. And Will notices him acting weird and asks what's going on, but he doesn't say anything.
It was funny the way that dialogue tree went, where it's like, Will's like, hey, can you help me drain fluid from this hose? And the Russian's like, ah.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. He's having a full-on homophobic meltdown.
Definitely. So he goes to Danielle and asks to be assigned a new partner because he's worried Will might have AIDS. His worry scale goes just off the charts immediately. It's crazy. Danielle denies his request, though.
AIDS hysteria, I wonder if something changed to make, because I feel like by the midnight, certainly by the time I graduated high school, of course, I was from Indiana, birthplace of Ryan White. We got a pretty front row seat about, you know, what AIDS can and cannot do and how it's transmitted and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like I feel like that somehow this world is a way far behind on that. And I'm not sure why. Like, I understand if it's like exactly the same, like I don't expect them to be more progressive, but like, it's not clear to me why in the mid-90s they're still, or maybe it's a Russian thing.
I was going to say he's also Russian. So,
cause the rest of the, like Ed, like who is a pretty conservative guy himself, is like not sweating the vodka from the gay man, you know, like it might just be a Russian thing. You might be, you might. Do you think the other thing I wondered, because like the Russian's relationship with his family seemed pretty stilted, is it possible that Roland himself is closeted gay?
I don't know. I had considered that option during the episode, but I didn't get any hint that that was true. More that he was just a ignorant bigot.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know. I've just been like my whole lifetime, it seems like some of the most ignorant bigots turned out to be closet gay.
Sure.
In terms
of
politicians, clergymen, things like
it
that.
Happens,
like, you know, use that as a cloak to wrap yourself. I can't possibly be gay. Like, how much I hate them all.
Right.
You
know,
meanwhile, catch me at the truck stop, tapping my feet under stall number 3. Yeah. I don't know. It's always something I'm on guard for when I see someone this. I felt the same thing with the VP. Like, anyone that rolls in with this big a thunderhead about something, like, wow, this has got, this is some kind of personal connection, dude.
Right. Why so riled up? The thing that I was more worried about here is them being able to fix these habs or not because of their own ignorance. Like, they can't work together. They can't fix these habs. These are life supporting devices that they absolutely need.
Yeah.
You're gonna die because of your ignorance, man. Fix this shit. Don't worry about, like Danielle tells him, right? If we're gonna die of anything up here, it's gonna be because we can't get the damn base fixed.
Is that commentary about climate change?
I didn't pick up on it, but maybe, I suppose.
Yeah, like
you can't fix your environment.
Ignorance.
Yeah, all these other problems don't matter.
Spaceship Earth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All breathing the same air, drinking the same water, shitting and pissing in the same seas and lakes,
and then drinking it. Yep.
Yep.
All right.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Danny sits and thinks about the family he doesn't want but has, and the family he doesn't have but wants, and he runs out of pills, so he goes to the medicine locker and steals some. And then Ed calls him aside to apologize for treating him like a child earlier and says that he's changing the protocol so Danny doesn't have to go back to orbit.
It's another thing that could, another intervention that could have saved Danny, and Ed is gleefully overriding it because he thinks he knows what's best.
Yeah. And feels guilty about treating him like the child he views him as. It's
You definitely get that in his messages to Karen, that Ed is all kinds of conflicted about, you know. And I also wonder if that is, I wonder how much of that is Ed, because I thought Ed, well, I don't know. Would Ed have landed that thing if Danny hadn't been there? If anybody else had been in the co-seat?
I really
other than
think
maybe
so.
Kelly.
I think he would have tried, yeah.
I thought he really scared himself almost crashing in that mountain, but it might have been secondhand fear for Danny. The other thing I wondered is, like, what are Danny's calls back home to his wife look like?
Oh, God. Yeah.
I feel so sorry for this young woman and their newborn
baby. Is he even
baby.
Calling? I'm not even certain he's calling her. He calls his brother
at one point.
God,
if he doesn't. If he does, I mean, they never show it.
They never show it, and I felt like he was trying to escape her. I don't know why he would call back, but that's a real dick move.
Danny codeine tripping to another Mazzy Star song was certainly a mood. And then you'll notice that, like, he got the codeine, he re-upped on codeine with Tylenol, and he also got what's essentially meth. It's prescription meth. That they, you know, they even it out.
The uppers and downers.
Yeah, this is widely used to treat ADHD. Wait, whatever.
Okay. I'm
too ADD to know what ADD and ADHD stands for. It's that. It also treats narcolepsy, but it's also, you know, seen as a performance enhancer, you know, because it increases your concentration, your stamina, and your duration. But it also makes one moody, irritable, robs you of sleep.
That's what he needs, because he's not already those things.
Yeah, this is not good. And you know he's going to mix with Shiner Bock. They get a little bit of alcohol into the prescription, so.
Yeah, or Pepsi. I don't know. That might be all they have up there. And with his anger problem already, I mean, he's naturally sort of bent that way, so that'll be interesting. This all got to blow up sooner rather than later, I think. So Kelly and Peloton get it on in the kitchen. I don't know. I'm not. No more salads for me, thanks. After this incident,
It's the swamp. Yeah, drain the swamp. Get, yeah, we need to drain the swamp. This is
You need to open it up like an airlock and refresh that thing because
Because like it's funny because I was thinking when they're saying, "Do you think people will hear and it turn on an air cycle and there's all this thump?" And I'm like, "There's no way that's going to cover it." And then I was gratified to see on the other side of the bulkhead, the other Russian scientist, like, "Oh Jesus, look at them fucking in the swamp. It's humid, humid and gross in there."
Yep.
Can't clean up. You're going to use that a thimble of your precious half gallon to wash your bits. Nah, right? I don't. It's like extreme camping sex. I don't.
No, thank you.
As glamorous as you'd think.
No, not at all. So afterward, Kelly tells him that Ed can't find out about it when he comes to the Hab. And she asked Peloton about their joint Helios mission, but he refuses to tell her anything and she's pissed. Which, I mean, what'd you expect? You're gonna use sex as leverage here?
She thought she could fuck the information out of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like some kind of Red Sparrow agent or something. And she was mad that she couldn't. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, Kelly seems a bit immature, surprisingly, this season, but
that's fine. I've not seen her have much of a love life. So Ed arrives at the NASA base and he meets the Russian commander and says hello to his friends and daughter. He brought some spare equipment and snacks and they have a little Thanksgiving dinner. And Ed meets Peloton, who makes a bad first impression, but not for the reasons that Kelly was worried about. It's actually the exact opposite. He goes a little overboard with Eve. Wait, daughter? Who? Who? I've never heard. There's a woman on this ship? What?
Oh, man. And Ed just being, you know... What's so funny is because he was a big sexist pig two seasons ago, and now he's chiding the Russians about... And the real reason he's not a sexist pig is because the Russians pressured him into accepting women into the program. It's turtles all the way down on Ed's hypocrisy here, but it's still a funny, really funny scene.
Okay, speaking of the sexism and turtles all the way down, this Russian commander has a totally different attitude with Ed, which I'm not sure if he respects him more because he's a man or he respects him more because he's white.
It's interesting because, like, I know the Russians, the Soviets, I should say, on the surface were very, like, you know, progressive when it comes to racism. And that's something that they really hammered the United States on, the fact that and they openly encourage people to defect and move. There's a whole community called Black Russians that are literally Black Russians. I don't think it's a huge community, but I would suspect there is not a lot of black folk in the mid-90s in the Soviet Union, and they probably are, you know, kind of baseline European racist towards black folk. Because I think Danielle levels that accusation, and she would know.
No, I think
he's a little bit dismissive of her because probably the woman a little bit, and mostly the black part.
And the power, right? Like, I think, he doesn't have a problem with his female cosmonaut being on the mission, but she's not the one in command. So I wonder if that were reversed, if she were in command, if he would resent her as well too. I don't know. The racism thing is more important here.
Yeah, because the other thing, the real smoking gun is the Russian cosmonaut department is ran by a woman. So his ultimate boss is a woman. So like if he had a problem with that, definitely feels like a racism problem.
And I love their little beaker shot glasses. They're using any means necessary to toast up here.
I like the hi, Bob. Always love to get the podcast name. Still relevant. It's going to be a sad day when Danny or Danielle and Ed. I hate fucking Danny for another reason. I can't just call Danny, which is what she's referred to as most of the show. I got to clarify.
Thank God they're on the same ship because that'd be extra confusing.
It'd be confusing. I really love the first idea of the first Martian Thanksgiving. That would absolutely be a date that celebrated. And I like the you know, they're taking all these, you know, these gourmet MREs and there's like Christmas apple pie. I noticed, and I wonder if it was intentional, there was like a whole stack of potatoes, just potato roasts that no one took. And I wonder if that is like extended the Martian goof.
Like the, okay, they're all grown and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, like there's just like conspicuously this pile of potato entrees that no one is touching because who the fuck would eat potatoes on Mars?
Sure. That's pretty good. All right, Will does another TV interview about growing up gay, and it greatly affects Ellen, who's watching. Her husband, Larry, tries to talk her into making another personal sacrifice for her political career, but then comes up with the idea for essentially the don't ask, don't tell policy. And it doesn't help Will because it's too late for that, but it's the best they can, she thinks that they can do right now. And it probably is, given the political realities.
That's the interesting thing. I know that the Clintons, and I'm not their biggest fans myself, get pilloried a lot because of the what seems to be clearly hypocritical stances that they took. You know, Bill Clinton was the author of the don't ask, don't tell policy. And here they take it to the extreme. It's like, what if, you know, they were actually gay people, intimately aware of all the problems, and this is still the best that they thought they could do? Because it's tempting. Like, this was a bold thing that pissed everybody off at the time, and it was a horrible compromise. It's going to set up a big political fight in the future, but it's also the best thing you can do at the time. And it's also, it reminds me of that scene we watched in Lincoln, which is wild. We recorded a podcast 2 months ago, and it's not going to come out for another two months.
Right.
The Daniel Day-Lewis Spielberg Lincoln. And Tommy Lee Jones plays a very progressive, radical abolitionist. And at the end of the movie, they get the 13th Amendment signed, and he's pilloried by the more progressive people in his party. And he says something like, yeah, this is a half measures, this, but it also ends forever the detestable institute of slavery. And I'm going to sleep really well knowing that that is going to be the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like if you say that, if he teleports into the 1960s and says that to civil rights leaders, they're probably not. But like, that's the thing about politics, man. What seemed unthinkably progressive 30 years ago is going to be insanely head in the mud or head in the sand, backwards thinking 30 years hence.
It's the idea of not letting perfect be the enemy of good. And they can do a little bit of good here, right? It can keep a lot of gay people from being discharged summarily from the military. Allows them to serve their country. I mean, they definitely trade-offs there. It's not a perfect solution by any means, but it's what they can get done right now. It's the shield that they can give the people who are hiding their identities anyway already, so that they can at least live some kind of life that they want to live in the military.
But unfortunately, as they point out themselves in the scene, it is going to completely fail to do anything. It's not going to shield Will at all because he is the one that stepped out, and
he's already outed himself, right?
It's funny because he's the lightning rod that caused this like half step in a progressive direction, but he's going to pay the ultimate price and bear 100% of the burden.
He's going to be a martyr for his cause, and that's sometimes what's required. A lot of the time, what's required.
Yeah, you can be authentically who you are. You can serve your country. Pick one.
Sure. All right. Sergei brings Margot more requests from the Russian space administrator, then causes a scene to secretly write an equation on her record. And from that, she figures out that the Russians have found liquid water on Mars, and she tells some people, including Aleta, who charges off to tell Danielle.
I looked at this formula, and I'm not going to fucking do math. I helped my son through algebra during the pandemic, and it almost killed me. And I'm planning on never to do math again in my entire life. I think if you do the math and reduce this formula, you're going to come out to something that equals H2O.
Okay.
It looks like I squinted, and it looks like if you reduced everything and put everything on the right side of the equation, E would equal H2O.
Sure.
I don't know. Regardless, Margot did do the work, and she got liquid water as the result. Also, I thought it's also, if you don't want to do the math, and you count the tracks and where Sergei put the needle drop, it was right on the Aquarius track of Mary Lou Williams' trio,
okay,
the Zodiac sequence. So I think there's different ways you can get to that hint, but Sergei found a way to fight back.
Yeah. And I'm with Aleta now. Fuck these guys. NASA saved their lives and their honor, and they are it's returning that with secrecy and betrayals of their own. So
might we want to run up the flagpole, the decision to tell the base commander that the Russians are,
I mean the flagpole standing there, right, when Aleta's like running off to tell the commander. So if the flagpole wants to do something, she can.
But is the flagpole morally compromised because of her?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Totally.
And even, like I said, even if she runs it up Margo's flagpole, like, Margo still has a boss.
Yeah.
It's Ellen. It's probably the DOD chief, too. Like, I thought it was wild that she just ran off and did, and no one stopped her. Because, like, there's implications. There's political implications. And the show has often dealt in, like, what do you tell people versus what do you not tell people to manage these political realities. And it felt jarring to, it's another, I haven't felt this way since the first episode, a little bit of a narrative shortcut or a little bit of them. Maybe we've seen it so many times, they're just like, oh, you're just going to roll with the punches. But I thought it was rash.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely that. And I was surprised how mild the reaction was, too. You know, Danielle's pissed, but, like,
She doesn't
airlock anybody.
Right. Yeah. She's not going to confine anybody. She's just going to tell people another thing. But it's, there's no well thought out political answer to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then we go to the combined NASA, Russian and Helios crews all partying in the NASA Habs. Will drinks from the bottle of vodka directly. And Roland refuses to drink anymore after that. Will notices and goads him into saying what he really feels. And they get into a brief fight, which Danielle puts a stop to with her newly discovered information about the liquid water they've found. I was so worried in this scene, and not for the confrontation between Will and Roland and the fight that ensued. I was worried about someone getting drunk and puking in space. Now, I know it isn't a zero-G situation, but puking in space in an enclosed hab is a bad idea, regardless. Mm. The smell. Can they even tell? None of them have showered.
I was going to say.
Stink.
Yeah, this is just God. Yeah,
it would add to the potpourri, right?
It would make it a lot worse, and it would also dehydrate the fuck out of you.
Oh, that too. Yeah. I mean, even just drinking, whether you puke or not.
Oh, God. You're going to try to treat a hangover on a half gallon of water?
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, busting. Maybe have Helios bring you over some of those methamphetamines and some of those opioids, because you're going to need them.
I wonder if there's something that Danielle's like communism, capitalism, a match made in hell. Obviously, the Russians don't collapse because of, you know, Ronald Reagan, runaway defense spending. What is going to cause, but they also are still going through what appears to be some kind of glasnost type of situation with Gorbachev. I wonder if this is going to be the impetus of Russia dipping its toes more into capitalism. You know, the fact that they're in bed with Helios and I wonder if that's going to bend them a little bit closer towards the arc of our reality.
I don't know. We haven't seen much insight into the Russian culture over there in the show, right?
They're like, true blue, at least the Russians that are in their cosmonauts are true blue believers in the immortal science of communism, for sure.
Definitely, yeah. But like, how is their society operating? What are their political leaders thinking and doing in any given moment?
KGB are still runaway crazy assholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But we're leaning on a lot of like stuff we know about the Soviets from that era. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen any follow-on effects. So I'm curious. I'd like to have maybe more of an insight into what they're thinking and doing over there. How they're living.
Also, the defector's reaction. What'd you say his name? Roland. Roland's reaction is also like, we go back to revisit the Danielle and Will conversation. This is like completely lacking in intersectional analysis because it just immediately centers on him.
Sure.
I was betrayed because you're a fucking liar. Well, why was he fucking liar? Like, if he was honest about who he was, you would never have met. You would have never been on a mission with him. Like, there's not even like a first thought of objection. It's just all like, oh, my God, I'm so afraid I'm going to get space AIDS. And this guy somehow contaminated me with his gay. So it's like as disheartening as the conversation with Danielle is, this is even more so, especially since they appeared to be very close.
That's the thing. Point. Yeah, this immediately just ruined what I thought was a beautiful friendship
which in Roland's mind is even deeper betrayal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because again, he can't help but center it on himself.
After the party, Ed apologizes to Kelly for not telling her about the water, and she's excited about the possibility of discovering life in that water, and says that she needs to be a part of this mission because it's too important of a thing to not be a part of.
I thought there's maybe some conflict in the future because the way Ed talks about these water samples and like, well, don't worry, we're not going to drink any of the water if it turns out there's already light. Will they really?
Right.
I think if there's some kind of Martian amoeba, that Martian amoeba gets immediately wiped out in pursuit of drinking water.
Uh-huh.
There's no way. There's no way they respect. We don't respect our pristine environments on Earth. What the hell? Are you going to do it on Mars when it's a survival? Like that? And that's just for our comfort and luxury.
I mean, it like, is Mars, such a massive foothold. Like, to actually gain a foothold on another planet, you almost need to find something like this. And there is no way the dev is going to give up that foothold if there's some kind of organism in this that is deemed to be alive, right? He's either not going to tell anybody and just go ahead and drink it and use it, or he's going to kill it intentionally.
Yeah. And for some reason, I think, especially in online lefty circles, they act like the Soviet Union was this bastion of like environmental protectionism because they don't have the profit motive to, you know, destroy their. But like, you're all aware that the Russians evaporated an entire sea in their border. Like, America's done some fucked up shit, but like, what if they made Lake Michigan disappear? You know, Russians did that. Like, you know, those scenes in Half-Life with the floaters. Like,
I've never heard of this.
Yeah. If you Google RLC, ARALSEA, and go to image search, you will see side-by-side comparisons of how they have just, you know, evaporated this inland sea. So
how'd they do it? Open a microwave and point it at it and leave it on full?
It's the same reason you do anything. You're just using up a resource. You're using the water for other things. Okay. You're damming it up.
I thought you meant evaporated it. And I'm like, wait, no.
Yeah, what? And like just to piss off Captain Planet. Uh-huh. And it's similar to what's happening with the Red Sea as well. Like, you know, you're using it up and developing its potential.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that like, you don't need necessarily a profit motive to destroy your landscape. You just need to feed and water a shit ton of people beyond your means.
Oh, sure. You know? Yeah, we're dealing with that here. We've done it to lakes and rivers. We just haven't stepped up to seas yet, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And it's not to say Russian uniquely bad, America uniquely good. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm just saying that like, if you think that the being communist or socialist and anti-capitalist would make you respect the environment, it's not the case.
Yeah. But this is why I think that Will and Kelly need to get together and have a conversation, because she's very like, you know, hope and altruism and excitement about this new frontier and what it could mean for their civilization. And I think Will is too, from a different angle. But yeah, I think they have a lot in common. And it's not for nothing that they are some of the younger people on this mission.
I think you're right. In fact, I was a little surprised that we didn't see Kelly being the counterpoint of everybody else. So like, you know, I don't think Danielle is like personally squicked out. She's just pissed that it's jeopardizing our mission. Uh-huh. I think the Russians feel what the Russians feel. And then I agree is what I'm trying to say. I think Will would have a friend in Kelly. And I was kind of surprised that they didn't have a scene like that. But there's plenty of season left.
Yeah. All right, then we go to another young astronaut who's maybe not quite on the same page as anybody. Danny, watching another of Ed's videos to Karen, where he sees that Ed's worried about him acting like Gordo was acting on the moon. And Ed wonders in the video if it was a mistake to bring him on the mission. So Danny punches Ed just on the screen. Breaks his hand, breaks the screen.
I mean, it was a mistake to bring Danny.
Yes.
It's also a mistake to continually look at him through the prism of his father, because they're similar but not the same. And I think Ed's doing things that he thinks would bring the old Gordo around, and it's just making things worse with Danny.
That's the thing. I can't blame Ed too much, right? Because it did work with Gordo. Gordo became a hero by the end of that. It was exactly what he needed. And it was a huge risk at the time, but it worked out. And
gosh, you're right.
Again.
The confirmation bias. Like, Ed's like, well, yeah, if I had settled and done the right thing and not pushed, like, people would have died on the moon, you know? So, yeah, he comes by a lot of this shit, honestly. It just sucks because we know the behind the scenes, all the information, and we're just like, yeah.
It was a bad idea from the beginning.
Uniquely horrifying to us.
But for him, it looked like a great idea from the beginning. So,
yeah.
I will say, did you notice this trackball that he's using? Was this like straight out of the 90s, this Microsoft trackball?
Yeah,
I used to have one of those.
I did too. Like, and there's a lot of passionate trackball supporters. And
was
a better world, are they saying?
Trackball?
Is a Logitech. I don't, wasn't that an IBM thing? I thought it was a Logitech that he was using.
Oh, I thought it was a Microsoft. I had a Microsoft one.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, we had three. Okay. I don't know, but are they positing that in a better world, we'd all be using trackballs?
Sure. And Newtons, right? Like,
yeah.
The Apple Newton. Yeah, there's a lot of technology. I think they have smartwatches on the Helios crew too, right? Or some.
I was wondering if that was something that everyone would have, or if they're suggesting this is how we got smartwatches, but it seems like some kind of like life monitor kind of blah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Definitely a lot of tech stuff to watch here as we progress. And then finally, Ellen announces the don't ask, don't tell policy. Essentially, she calls it uniform first, I think.
Mm-hmm.
She announces that policy officially, and also that Will is going to be discharged from the army on his return. And Will leaves the habitat to take in the sunrise. And then a guy that Larry
is... A little bit more of a pining last, you know, melancholy, less of a hopeful.
There was a definite change
Will.
In feel in this scene. And I don't know if it's legitimate or if it's just, you know, contextually it feels different because I think about it differently, but I don't know what he's thinking.
A lot can happen in 2 years. Just because the president's saying this now.
Sure.
Like, I'm sure. Like, if he comes back, maybe he'll be a hero by the end of the season.
Yeah, we'll see.
Even more than he is for being one of the first people to land on Mars.
Right. So then we get a final scene here where a guy that Larry is sleeping with and another of his friends talk about Ellen's policy at a bar. And he reveals some information that he shouldn't have. And afterward, his friend makes a call to someone about it. And that information is that he has... I think that information is that he has slept with Larry. And specifically in the Oval Office at some point.
Yeah.
But that Larry's gay, right?
He's not being careful. And the wrong people are going to overhear it.
I'm very confused about this scene because it feels to me like these are old friends who are both gay who have like talked about this prior to this conversation and both know that Larry's gay. Mm-hmm. I don't know why like anything that he said would be such a shocking reveal. Has this guy just turned opportunist all of a sudden and what he's like maybe recording him in this scene?
Oh, no, I think so. Like, okay. Did you notice that this guy Larry's lover was like his assistant in previous scenes?
No.
So like Larry's working with him closely at the Oval Office. But
is the guy that she's talking to here not also gay?
He is super gay, I think. And I think what they're talking about is they're both aghast at, because they both know the makeup of this administration, that this is the solution they came up with. But then the one guy's like, I've known Larry for a long time. I guarantee not only was he okay with it, it was his idea, which is literally true.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's just being gossipy. I don't think that he's calling like a reporter or a government contact. I think he's calling a friend, but he might be high enough in the government that his phones are bugged or people are listening or monitoring, you know, for things about the vice president or not the, I guess, vice president, the chief of staff, the president's safety. I think it's going to get out in that kind of, Ron Moore's telling me that this guy's is already been warned that you got to be careful who you tell things to in Washington because everyone's listening and it's an explosive thing. I don't think he's doing it because he's a shit. I think he's just careless.
Okay.
And
that recontextualizes things.
I might think about this because this guy, if you're a True Blood fan, you'll recognize Michael McMillan as Reverend Steve Newland. And that guy is a non-serious person who's a bit of a shit and a bit of a careless idiot. So I might be taking some of that baggage into it. But that was my interpretation of the scene.
Gotcha. I was very confused because I thought he was intentionally screwing over his friend and Larry.
And maybe he is, because he's a gay man who's mad that another gay man has sold his brothers and sisters into this kind of like eternal closetude. It could be. I wouldn't rule it out, but I thought it was just more gossipy, and it's the gossip that's going to get them, that's going to sink the ship.
Yeah, we'll see. But that's the very end of the episode. That's the cliffhanger.
Yep. What's going to happen? Yeah, I'm really curious to see what happens to the NASA settlement once Helios abandons it with the Russians for greener, literally, well, I guess redder, wetter pastures.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really curious because, like, it definitely feels like we have another shoe hovering at orbital distance, ready to drop like a Sojourner in crash land right in the middle of Washington, and just when is it going to happen?
Yeah.
No way.
I feel like there's an Ellen octopus finishes above us wearing shoes about to drop another seven on us, honestly.
Yeah. Already lost. There's no way Ellen's presidency survives the season.
I couldn't imagine.
There's no way.
Because this has seems like there's
too many things building up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Or maybe she does. Maybe that's where America takes its heel face turn and it's like, you know what? We don't give a shit. But there's a lot of other things that seem like she's unpopular on top of everything else, too. The HE3 stuff. Seems like the political ineffectiveness of her administration. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Her political power might be reaching its limits. And then if you throw in a personal scandal like this, whether it should vulnerable. Be a scandal or not. She's very vulnerable. So
that'll do it for our coverage this week. If you would like to send us some feedback, please do so. FAM stands for All Mankind. FAM. Join the fam at baldmove.com to send us some feedback. And we're hoping to get another feedback episode regularly scheduled feedback episode. Thanks to everybody who has sent in feedback. And thanks to everyone listening. We really appreciate it. Check out the other stuff we're doing at baldmove.com or follow us on Twitter at baldmove, and we'll see you next week for the lucky seventh episode when obviously the shit's going to hit the fan on For All Mankind. Until then, I'm your host Aaron,
and I'm Jim.
See ya.